Today's talk is billed as Jewish Life on Campus, Vermont, America, Israel, and the World. That's a lot to talk about. So let's get started right here in Vermont. Our Hillel, the University of Vermont, which was founded in 1951, is in the midst of a period of explosive growth. Hillel is proudly supporting the exciting growth of the university by helping attract wonderful students and enriching their experiences while they are here on campus. I'm so proud of UVM Hillel's outstanding director, Matt Vogel, and the board of directors and supporters led by those great champions of UVM, Dan and Carol Burak. And my gratitude to President Tom Sullivan and UVM Foundation President Rich Bundy for building a partnership between Hillel and the university that is a model for the entire Hillel movement. We're especially proud of UVM Hillel's alternative spring break program. Vermont is the ninth hungriest state in the nation, and our students commit a week of spring break to addressing local poverty needs in Burlington and around the state. The new credit course that is being launched with the Rubenstein School of Environment and Natural Resources for Desert and Arid Studies in the city of Arad in Israel, and the task force, Dan, that you're chairing, Dan Fogel's chairing here at UVM, looking at the growth of Jewish studies here at UVM, these are all important initiatives that the entire Hillel movement is watching. The Jewish world and the world at large needs more places of higher learning like UVM. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention that UVM is not the only thriving Hillel in Vermont. Our Hillel at Middlebury College is also doing a terrific job supporting Jewish life on campus under the leadership of Rabbi Ira Schaefer, the long-serving chaplain and Hillel director there. I was excited to meet with the student board of Middlebury College, Hillel, last week, and I can't tell you how much they inspired and motivated me. But no one here in Vermont, nor any college or university leader in the country, and certainly no Jewish leader, can afford to become complacent about Jewish life on campus. I know that Vermonters believe passionately in the Jewish concept of Tikkun Olam, repairing the world. So did Hillel the Elder, by the way, our organization's namesake. The essence of Tikkun Olam is the understanding that the perfection of the world requires an active partnership between human beings and God, however you understand the concept of God. God created the beauty of the Vermont landscape that my family witnessed this week, but humanity protects it. For 90 years, the leaders of Hillel have created safe and welcoming spaces on campus so that all Jewish students, immigrants and not, religiously observant and not, culturally proud or largely assimilated, could participate in the vigorous intellectual life of the university without fear or coercion, and while also helping the Jewish students on those campuses develop their Jewish identities, their spirituality, their religious values, and their sense of their place in the Jewish people. This ability to build Jewish identity on college campuses across the United States, North America, and the world remains overwhelmingly true today. It is still the case. But it is not inevitable. And it is not anything we can ever take for granted. And I do not take it for granted. Now, this fall, once again, the love affair between the Jewish people and higher education is back in full bloom. The beginning of a new school year, coinciding with the Jewish New Year 5775, marked the beginning of robust and spirited programming for Jewish college students in North America and across the globe. Well over half of the 400,000 Jewish students on campus in North America have participated with Hillel in opening barbecues, Shabbat dinners, and of course celebrating the high holidays. But even as Jewish life on campus thrives, careful observers have noted that there was more anti-Semitic and anti-Israel activity on American college campuses last year than in the previous 10 years combined. And that was before the events of this past summer in the Middle East threatened to raise tensions even further. Of course, the campus is part of the larger world around us. The incidents we have seen on campus reflect explosions of anti-Semitism in the world that many of us never thought we'd see in our lifetime. Still, the intensity, disproportionality, and sheer irrationality of anti-Israel and anti-Jewish activities on too many campuses cannot be ignored. This negative activity is no coincidence, but rather an organized and planned incitement. Last year was the 10th anniversary of the well-financed and coordinated BDS propaganda campaign that was exported from Europe and the Middle East by groups whose main goal is to destroy Israel as a nation. And to achieve that goal, they have targeted America's college campuses. I suppose it's obvious why campuses are a special target. The opportunity to share the views of the next generation is simply too tempting for any political movement. And the presence of even a small number of faculty members who are willing to use their precious academic freedom to push an aggressive political agenda through their academic associations and other venues makes the campus an especially fertile ground for these groups to plant their seeds. We must therefore acknowledge this reality, and we must respond accordingly. Now, Hillel does so by engaging and educating students about the most challenging issues in Jewish life so that they can make their own decisions and be their own best advocates. We draw on our expertise in promoting deep and thoughtful discussion to sponsor a broad range of programs, events, and speakers. Our award-winning Ask Big Questions initiative is a unique pedagogy that helps college students tackle the biggest questions in life in a safe and intellectually respectful environment. Recognizing that the events of this past summer would likely shine a spotlight on discussions about Israel and the Middle East, Hillel professionals recently heard from both the Israeli ambassador to the United States and the leader of the opposition in the Knesset. Hillel student leaders have organized interfaith gatherings and campus dialogues. Hillel educators have offered seminars and discussions for students to learn about contemporary Israeli society and culture, to reflect on their own relationships with Israel, and to develop skills as dialogue facilitators. Just weeks ago, student leaders at Cooper Union Hillel countered an effort to boycott a speech by the leader of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, and instead encouraged Jewish students to attend and listen respectfully, which they did. What all of these efforts have in common is this: Hillel welcomes and includes students of all backgrounds and all political positions in an environment that is intellectually rigorous, respectful of difference, and committed to honest conversation. At the same time, Hillel is passionate about engaging students with Israel. From the more than 100,000 students who have gone to Israel on Hillel-led birthright trips, to the dozens of Israelis who serve as Israel fellows on our campuses, to the manifold efforts of our professionals to educate students about Israel, Hillel is deeply connected to the homeland of the Jewish people. Now, for some, these simultaneous commitments to openness and pluralism on the one hand and to Israel on the other can seem contradictory. For us, there is no contradiction. And you don't need to take my word for it. Just drop into the new UVM Hillel building on Colchester Avenue, or stop a UVM Hillel leader anywhere on campus and find out for yourself. If you're not welcomed with open arms, whatever it is you want to discuss, then I'm a crunchy monkey. Of course, Hillel at 90 does not know all the answers. I look forward to finding new and even more successful strategies by working in partnership with Matt and the terrific student and professional leaders here at UVM. But make no mistake, Hillel is prepared for the challenges we face today. We will not take for granted that campuses are naturally and inevitably welcoming to Jewish students. We will work for this goal every day. And so must our university leaders. One need look no further than Ohio University in my home state, the first public university there, established in 1803, to see what can happen when a university fails to respond appropriately. That's where the student body president, you may have heard, accepted the university president's ALS ice bucket challenge. You all saw those ice bucket challenges on the internet. And perversely twisted it into a blood bucket challenge to demand the university boycott and divest itself from Israel. Now, the student clearly showed bad judgment, but even worse was that she was encouraged and supported by a tenured university professor. Indeed, the video was actually staged in the professor's backyard. What happened next was even more alarming. At a subsequent student government meeting, four Jewish students who were protesting the Student Senate president's action were taunted with shouts of Nazi, fascist, and bully by student leaders and professors, including the same professor who helped stage the blood bucket challenge in the first place. Now, the student body president, who the Jewish students were protesting, was given the power by the university to have the university police arrest them. And the police did just that. The treasurer of the Student Senate, who, by the way, was not Jewish, and who resigned in protest over the manner in which the meeting was handled, described the scene this way. He said, quote, "Now it becomes our turn to listen to our constituency. And what do? We disrupt them when they're speaking. We chant when they sit down. And we have them arrested for speaking out." So to all university leaders considering what they would do if this happened on their campus, I ask, where were the educators whose job it is to teach students to think critically, see both sides of an argument, argue in a civil manner, and respect each other's views? Where was the university administration whose responsibility it is to make all students feel safe? That this happened at all infuriates me. That it happened in my home state of Ohio saddens me. Now, I am convinced that what happened at Ohio University is an exception, not the rule. But it is a warning, and one we will not ignore. So I mentioned that we meet here today during the Jewish holiday of Sukkot, which is known in English as the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths. Among other things, the Sukkot holiday celebrates the fall harvest. The Jewish tradition refers to this holiday as Zaman Simchatenu, the time of our joy. Indeed, our Torah, the five books of Moses, actually commands us to rejoice on this holiday. This is the only place in the Torah where we're commanded to be happy. Now, looking out at this crisp Vermont fall day, it's easy to see why the fall harvest was a time of great joy. But the commandment to rejoice at this time of year applies whether the crops were good or poor, whether the storehouses were full for the winter or not. Ladies and gentlemen, our storehouses are indeed full. Today's generation of young Jews has more opportunity and more choices than any generation in Jewish history. Today's Hillel students are studying every subject imaginable at any college or university they choose. So far this school year, more than a dozen new U.S. colleges want to join the Global Hillel Movement, embracing our mission, our values, and our vision. Today's Hillel students will live in a global world and will travel the globe freely throughout their lives. And Hillel will be there too. A few weeks ago, I returned from Russia and the Ukraine, where we celebrated the 20th anniversary of Hillel's opening in those countries. In Moscow and Kiev, I joined in a rebirth of Jewish life, even as conflict consumes the Ukraine and forced us to suspend our Hillel in Donetsk on the border of Ukraine and Russia. In Odessa, the birthplace of Shalom Aleichem, I helped put up a mezuzah, the welcoming prayers that Jews put on the doorposts of our homes, our offices, and our places of worship, on the door of our new and our much expanded Hillel facility in the center of that historic town. In December, I will be traveling to Berlin to welcome our newest Hillel affiliates across Germany. Today, high-tech workers commute between the Silicon Valley and Jerusalem, while others in Moscow sprint off to London, New York, and Tel Aviv. This is not the Jewish future. It is the present. This is the world in which Hillel rises up to fulfill its mission to enrich every generation of Jewish college students, so that they can enrich the Jewish people and the world and live a fulfilling, righteous life. We are privileged to fulfill this mission across the globe and here in this beautiful place, the University of the Green Mountains. Thank you for having me here.
It's nice to receive all these accolades, Carol and I, but it's great to work with people like Eric and Dan Fogel at the university. That's what makes it worthwhile for me. And it's terrific. Well, I have some questions, and if anybody has any questions, the students can pass cards out. I've already gotten a couple. So, Eric, if you want to...
Sure, let's go.
This question says, the culture of different campuses is so different. How does Hillel International... I think I should say that Hillel International supports all the campuses, but the question is, with so many different cultures and so many different environments, how does Hillel International maintain any sense of common vision?
Yeah. Is the lapel mic's on? Can you hear me? Good. This is how I normally talk, teetering on the edge of the stage. Actually, delivering a lecture is not my not my common mode. It's a great question. The question is, for those who didn't hear, the culture of universities is so different. And that's part of the beauty of higher education. And of course, students self-select, in a sense. They have the chance to choose a university that meets their sense of themselves and their sense of where they'd like to study and where they'd like to grow. So how do we maintain common values? And I think this is a challenge that truly faces any large decentralized organization, which is how do we know what we must share in common, and then how do we allow the innovation and the particularization of a campus to grow? And so the answer is really we try to keep those things as simple as we can at Hillel International. Our vision is simply to help every student build an enduring commitment to Jewish life, Jewish learning in Israel, and we offer opportunities for students to do that, which campuses can take us up on, or they can also create their own innovative programs from the ground up. We have defined what we think excellence looks like on campus, and then we encourage our campuses to help achieve that excellence. We know that it involves strong leadership like you have here with Matt. We know that it involves having a program of Jewish education so that students can deepen their knowledge. We know that it involves having a student engagement and outreach program because we know students aren't going to all come to us. And we know that it involves having programs of engagement with Israel and education about Israel. And finally, as we said when we acknowledged Tom Sullivan and Rich Bundy and others, we know that it means having a close working partnership with the university leadership. We seek to achieve those things on every campus, and then we let the creativity and innovation of our students and our Hillel leaders adapt those principles to the campus itself.
Do the efforts by certain academic associations to boycott Israeli scholars and universities impact Hillel and Jewish students on campuses in North America?
So I mentioned this briefly in my remarks. You may have heard that this has been a topic of a few academic associations last year, the American Studies Association passed a resolution, the Modern Language Association considered a resolution. I think anthropologists or another discipline was doing similar this fall. Obviously, it doesn't change anything about the work that we do, but it does raise concerns that I think we, together with the university leadership, speaking to a former university president, and the current university leadership have to think about. And that's why in my remarks I wanted to make clear, and hope I did, that the responsibility for maintaining a sense of welcomeness and inclusion on campus and civility cannot solely be the responsibility of an organization like Hillel, but has to be, first and foremost, the responsibility of the university leadership, with whom we can closely partner and with whom we can closely engage, and develop common strategies, but ultimately the ability of a university to foster an intellectual environment that is truly independent and free of coercion belongs to the university. And the challenge of these resolutions that have come from a couple of the academic associations is not a question about the right of the individual faculty members to pursue a political agenda of their choosing. Of course, they have that right. The question is the extent to which those views are affecting the academic enterprise, and whether students in courses or programs that have nothing to do with the Middle East. They haven't chosen a Jewish studies program, or they haven't chosen a Middle East program, but whether they are encountering these issues in a way that is really not what that particular academic discipline is intended to be. So these things we ask the university leaders to pay close attention to. 100 university presidents responded to that ASA resolution last year with letters saying that under no circumstances would their university, under their leadership, entertain academic boycotts. And we're very proud of that. President Sullivan was one of those leaders, and we're certainly proud of his leadership in that regard.
Here's an interesting question. Have an apartment downtown on Church Street and need some students to take it over near the bars and pubs. I don't know. I would say if the Real Estate Commission goes to Hillel. Just joking. Vermont tradition of challenging questions. Explain your rationale for turning down the opportunity to speak at Open Hill Conference at Harvard University this weekend.
Well, first of all, I'd already accepted the great invitation to be here, so that was the first and foremost reason. But I've met with the student leaders several times. I guess I should back up for those who don't know what the background of the question is. Might be helpful. Hillel has guidelines, what we call standards of partnership that we use to help campuses make decisions regarding conversations of programming on Israel. For example, we don't support BDS and choose not to be the locus of speakers who are promoting BDS. They can do so anywhere else on campus. And don't need to do so at Hillel. There's a small group of activists in the great tradition of American higher education who disagree with our standards and believe we should have no guidelines that govern our approach to these issues. They formed a group called Open Hillel to advocate for that position. By the way, I should say that I find it, just the premise of it, a little unusual because every organization, universities and every organization I know, has guidelines that seek to implement their values and their principles through operating guidelines. And indeed, even the Open Hillel folks have guidelines that are governing the conference they're having this weekend to argue that we should have no guidelines. So it's a tough spot to be in. But they have every right to advocate. I met with them last December when they first formed their organization. I met with them again recently and listened carefully to the arguments. I've looked into every story that I've heard about whether or not people have been students have in any way been excluded from Hillel based on political opinions. I can assure you there's no such case. Students are all welcome in every activity that we have. And so, again, I feel like I've given the issue a good amount of personal attention and investigation. With 400,000 Jewish students on campus and wonderful universities and Hillels to visit, this is the place I belong. There are, I believe, about 200 or so out of the 400,000 associated with that group, and I'll continue to listen to them and continue to work with them, but my place is here today.
Anti-Semitism seems to be on the rise in Europe, and we are seeing isolated instances in America, on many on our campuses. Are you worried about the rise of anti-Semitism on campus, and what can we do about it?
So, again, I think that by telling the story of Ohio University today, I did so not because, as I hope I made clear, I think this is the rule. Rather, I think it is the exception. But nevertheless, it needs to be told because we need to be aware that these situations can quickly escalate. This is a little bit like leaving gasoline laying around on the ground and striking a match, you never quite know, where it is and what's going to happen. And so one has to be enormously careful and enormously proactive, and there's a very thin line, as we saw in Europe this summer, and as we've seen in other places, and frankly, as we saw in Higher University, between a protest which says that it is political and aimed at, for example, policies in the Middle East, and that which becomes very quickly anti-Jewish. So yes, I'm concerned about it, and that is why, again, I wish I could have been this morning only positive, because that's my mode and in my normal mode, and it is, as I've pointed out, Zaman Simchatenu, the time of our joy. I nevertheless feel it necessary to say, yes, we need to be concerned, yes, we need to be prepared, and yes, we need to be proactive. And I repeat again what I said earlier, which is I believe that this preparation does not fall only on student organizations like Hillel. It falls on the university leadership itself and the faculty leadership to be vigilant and to be aware of where the flashpoints are and where they can quickly escalate so that aggressive action can be taken. I'll tell you a story that has nothing to do with anti-Semitism, but it's one of the, when people say to me, well, what would you have a university do? I get asked that sometimes. I told Dan this story the other day, so he's already heard it. But when I was chancellor of the public universities in Ohio, I was at a basketball game between Kent State and the University of Akron. I was sitting next to the president of Kent State, and the game was getting towards the end of the second half. We have the assistant athletic director here, so he can. This is a story about your profession, and it was very tense. It was a very tight game, and just as it was reaching the climax of the game, a fight broke out between the teams, and they were fighting near the end of one end of the basketball court. And some folks in the stands, probably students, started getting involved, started throwing things, and it was really sort of on the verge of what looked like a riot breaking out. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my God, what do I do? I'm the chancellor of the university system. I'm sitting next to the president of the university, and I don't have a clue what I'll do if a riot breaks out. I could already picture the headlines, that were, running. Chancellor fails to stop riot at basketball game. And just as I was having this moment of panic, the athletic director, Jeff, walked out on the court, grabbed the microphone from the score table, quieted the crowd down, sat the players down on both benches, quieted the stands, and told people what the proper way to behave was, and that this was not at all what was expected in this university, and that this is not going to be permitted, and this is not the reputation of this university, and this is not the way we act or behave. He didn't call the police. He didn't call the, you know, he didn't hand it over to a committee. He acted as an educator in an educational environment. And so that's what ultimately we have to be prepared to do. Is to understand that we are educators in an educational environment, and that when something happens, it is, as the as the president I think likes to say, a learning opportunity, but not one that we can wring our hands about, one that we have to jump into.
All right, we're going to keep on schedule. I promised people that we would cover this. Eric will be here for a few minutes afterwards. He has to catch a plane back to Washington with his family. So I want to thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
You're really terrific.